welcome on stage, Neil Kohopka.
Yes. You guys good? How are you going? Yes. Awesome. Now, I love listening to the commercial songs that you hear on the radio these days, because a lot of these songs, they tend to have a featured rapper or a featured rap verse. So you get these really beautiful, soulful R&B melodies, and then it gets to the rap verse. So excuse the singing, but it's something like, girl, you're so beautiful, it makes me cry, and I just wanna love you till the day I die. Yeah, you ain't never seen a dick this big, this black. Gonna make you scream when I hit it from the back. I love the clean versions of rap songs as well that they put on the radio, where they've taken out the swear words. I mean, what's the point? Half the words are just gone these days. You hear this stuff that's like, girl, I'm gonna fuck you so good, then throw you on the bed and fuck you in the soap, get on your knees and suck it till he... on your face. Ugh. And you have these TV shows now that are trying to make musical superstars out of anyone and everyone. These shows like The Voice or The X Factor. They even have the audacity to have modern day pop stars judging these shows. People like Redfoo, Will.i.am, or Nicki Minaj judging The X Factor. And don't get me wrong, I don't mind their music, but they should not be judging these shows, okay? Because we all know if the tables were turned and Redfoo or Nicki Minaj were ever auditioning for The X Factor, they wouldn't stand a fucking chance, okay? They would be the joke audition they play as a commercial. If Nicki Minaj ever auditioned for The X Factor, she wouldn't be able to get past saying her name. She'd waddle on stage in a purple leotard with a sailor's cap. Simon Cowell would just be like, oh my God, what the fuck? Hi there, can you please tell everyone your name? Okay, Simon. My name is Anuki, Roman. Bad bitch can dig. Oh my God, Nikki, I don't think you belong on the X Factor stage. I think you belong in a fucking mental asylum. And now you have all these massive European DJs, they dominate the charts, and all they do is drop the bass. But that's all Europeans care about. Okay, I bet all these DJs were just a bunch of backpackers 5 years ago who stumbled across a synthesizer while they were on pills. Like... Yeah, this is quite good. And now they sell out massive arenas. And they can't even come up with music videos. Have you seen the music videos for all these DJs? Is just them playing the arenas. Like, it just cuts from the DJ going... to all the people going, oh yeah, we love you so much. Every time you drop the bass, I drop the semen in my pants. You You can basically torture a European person by not dropping the bass. Hey, Heinz, tell me where the money is. No, I've never tell you where the money is. What are you talking about? Okay, you leave me no choice. Oh, the bass is about to drop. Wait, you are going to drop the bass, aren't you? Oh, God, no, please, drop the bass! Okay, okay, I tell you! The money is in the strudel! But we worship these people. It's ridiculous, you know. They have so much influence on us. Do you know what the first album I ever owned was? The first album I ever owned was this album called Jackpot by this rapper Chingy. Yeah. I don't know if a few of you remember him, Chingy. Like, he had that song, I like the way you do that right there, right there. Yeah. Yeah, that was Chingy, okay? There is a song on that album called Ho, Where's My Cash? I was 10 years old. This was a present from my grandparents. And you know what else was a huge influence in my childhood? Professional wrestling. Yeah, WWE wrestling. I love that shit. Probably not the best influence on me, okay? They didn't exactly depict women in a good light, okay? You know, they once had a paddle on a pole match between two divas where one of them had to retrieve a paddle from the top of the pole and spank the other one into submission. Like, hillbillies bring their kids to this shit. They're like, hey, Billy, if you make it in NASCAR, you could get yourself a slut like that. Man, they once had a ladder match between Eddie Guerrero and Rey Mysterio with the custody papers of Rey's son hanging in a briefcase above the ring. Like, I would watch this shit, then I would listen to Chingy, then I would just kill prostitutes on Grand Theft Auto, okay? That was my childhood. And kids these days, they don't have any respect for their parents. You see these kids in video game stores, they're like, Mum, I want Grand Theft Auto 5 now. Only if you're a good boy, sweetie. Shut up, bitch. Buy me the game. Oh, he's such a handful. Like, these kids just look up to whoever they see in the media. And there were never any proper multicultural faces in the Western media. So all us second-generation Indians, Asians, Europeans, Arabs, we didn't really have anyone to look up to. Like, who did I have to look up to, huh? Apu from The Simpsons. That was it. Oh, thank you, please come again. And nothing's changed. Just look at the biggest show on TV today, The Big Bang Theory. Four nerds who are terrible with women, and the Indian guy is by far the worst. Have you seen this guy? Like, the blonde lady walks into the apartment and he's like, oh, praise Vishnu, I must go to my room. It's ridiculous, you know. So I do my bit for racial stereotypes, and I fuck a lot of girls. Every time I walk into 7-Eleven with a really hot girl, the guy just gives me this look like, you did it, bro. And Asians, who did you have growing up? Jackie Chan. Yeah, he was pretty cool. But do you remember the Rush Hour movies? Jackie Chan was always the studious one. He was the one that was like, Carter, this is a serious mission. We must focus. Whereas Chris Tucker was like, but damn, Lee, look at the ass on that girl. Shit. So you know what we did? We identified with African-Americans because they were cool. and we just wanted to be cool. And that's why we all have black mannerisms. Like, even me, as a kid, I'd walk around as a 10-year-old with a popped collar, like, yeah, check out my chingy CD, bitch. Mmm. Ho, where's my cash? Even first-generation Indians as well, I see these guys in gangs with, like, turbans and chains, like, yeah, bro, what are you looking at, bro, huh? Big Dinesh is going to smash you in the face, dude. Yeah. IT workers by day, gangsters by night. I've had Indian girls go ghetto on me. Like, I try to tell them I want to talk to their best friend and they go full on fucking ghetto on me. Like, they're like, oh, you've got to be joking, bro, huh? She is way out of your league. I will break your dick. And the thing is, like, none of us are from the ghetto. None of us are straight out of Compton. We're all straight out of commerce and medical degrees. All these Asians running around like, yo, we gonna turn up, we gonna turn up, y'all. The only thing you're turning up for is 9 a.m. finance lectures, okay? You'll be going to the doctor in 5 years like, oh, Dr. Zhang, I've got a really bad neck. Yeah, cause you've been sucking too much dick, motherfucker. But that's what it was, man. When I was growing up, when most of us were growing up, there were two main tastes of music. You were either like me, listening to Eminem and 50 Cent, thinking you were a gangster, or you had skinny jeans, 10 lip rings, and an emo fringe past your fucking dick, listening to, like, Fall Out Boy or Panic at the Disco, okay? Because that's when that, like, mainstream punk pop rock was big, okay? The actual hardcore death metal music it's based off is so much more extreme. I love this shit. You know this music that starts off innocently, then out of nowhere, the singer just gets possessed by the devil? You know, it's like, you are my heart's desire, I'll always be yours. Bleed for me. All these gothic girls, like, oh my God, he's so romantic. And that was a very white taste in music. Like, I don't think you'd ever see an Indian guy with, like, a skull singlet and spiked wristbands going, fuck the establishment, dude. I am not a sheep. And I don't know if you guys have ever been to a death metal or a hardcore metal concert, but it is pretty much a satanic cult, okay? Because at all these hardcore metal concerts, they have this bit up near the front of the stage called the death pit. Yeah, yeah. So every time the scream drops, every time the song goes from rah, 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 to rah, a bunch of guys charge into the death pit and just go fucking insane, okay? They just start going. And there's even two guys running around the whole thing like this, okay? It's so fucked up. And if they accidentally hit another person, they're like, oh, sorry, man, I didn't see you there. Are you okay? Are you sure? And then straight back into Demon Windmill, like. It's such a satanic cult. You could bring the most flamboyant black preacher from Mississippi and he'd be like, bring me forth the demon children, the good Lord gone save. Oh my God! Not even Jesus gone save y'all motherfuckers, damn! And that's the crazy thing with all these people who are into hardcore death metal music. Like, they otherwise live the most placid, suburban, middle-class lives. Like, during the week, they probably work at a video game store, and then on the weekend, I will not be controlled. Like, how do you get like that? Like, are they just sexually frustrated? Like, honestly. Because let's be honest, there's no shortage of sexually frustrated guys out there, you know? And a lot of guys who have this one particular excuse as to why they can't get laid. I'm too nice. You know these guys? Oh, I'm too nice, man. That's why I don't get girls. I'm just too nice, you know? I'm such a gentleman. Girls just want bad boys. Oh, fucking hell. If you think you're too nice, you're fucking creepy, okay? That's all it is, because that is a very powerful word women have over us. They can call us out for being creepy on anything. You know, we like a girl's Facebook status, creepy. We don't like her status, creepy. We smile too much, creepy. We fucking catch a bus to work. Oh my God, he catches the bus. What a fucking creep, seriously. Everything is creepy unless you are super attractive. In that case, you can get away with anything. Nothing will ever be called out as being creepy. Like Ryan Gosling can literally walk up to a girl sitting alone at a bus stop at midnight, like pull her hair, lick her face, and rub his nipples, and the girl would be like, oh my God, you're so wild, Ryan. But sex sells, you know, that's the truth of it. It's ridiculous just how much sex really does sell. Like, the perfect example of this are male fragrance commercials, okay? Every male fragrance commercial makes no fucking sense at all, okay? But we still fall for this shit. It's just some ridiculously good-looking guy doing shit, and then he just gives you life advice, okay? So it's just some model, and he's, like, digging a hole or something. He's like... Be the best you can be. Giorgio Armani. What the fuck? Are you selling fragrance or life coaching, man? Like... But that's how powerful that image is. They just need to name the brand and we still fall for this shit. Like, that guy can say anything and we'd still buy the product. Like, he could be like... Tomatoes are a fruit. Giorgio Armani. It's ridiculous, you know. Quality of product is essentially irrelevant. All that matters is quality of marketing, okay? And the perfect example of this is frozen yogurt. All right, so where I'm from in Sydney, frozen yogurt has just exploded in popularity out of nowhere, okay? And if you had said a couple of years ago that this marginally different frozen milk product was just going to eradicate the century-long duopoly of ice cream and gelato in the space of literally six fucking days, you would have been called crazy. But no, the first Froyo store opened and every teenager in snapbacks and chinos was like, oh my God, how good is this? Instagram everything! You know, it's stupid. Like, as a comedian, we're not really known as sex symbols. I mean, obviously there are a few exemptions. But in general, it's the pop stars. You know, they get all the pussy. You know, someone like Justin Timberlake, he can get on stage and dedicate a song to a girl in the audience. You know, I can't dedicate jokes to girls in the audience. Justin Timberlake can get on stage and be like, what's your name? Hannah, this song is for you, Hannah. And then sing a really beautiful song and the girl's like, oh my God, I love you, Justin. I can't do that, can I? I can't be like, this joke is for you, Hannah. Oh, you've been sucking too much dick, motherfucker. That was for you, Hannah. Like... I was in America recently, and I went to Starbucks. I ordered a small coffee, and obviously because it's America, they gave me a fucking bucket. And, I even said something. I was like, wow, that's so big. And the lady behind the counter, she actually said this to me. She goes, Yeah, it's the size of freedom. What does that mean? Diabetes is just freedom disease, honestly. America to me is like the really tall, handsome guy in high school that's just good at everything, but he fucking knows it. Like, he'll be walking around the hallway all cocky, like, hey, what's up, Bolivia? What's up, Sri Lanka? Sri Lanka's like, oh my God, he knows my name. And he'll be friends with you, but if you so much as look at him the wrong way, he goes nuts. Like, if you're some little country in the hallway that's like, America, your shoelace is untied. He's like, huh? Who said that? You, what's your name, bro? What's your fucking name? Lichtenstein. Yeah, okay. You listen to me, Dichtenstein. Yeah, you see these weapons of mass destruction? If you so much as look at me the wrong way again, I will fuck you up! And let's be honest, as Australia, we're kind of like the dumb best friend that's like, yeah, mate, he's gonna fuck you up! Shut up, Australia! New Zealand's off to the side like, yeah, suck on that. I'm pretty sure if North Korea was a kid in high school, he'd be the strange kid that no one really talks to. And America is always trying to find out what's in his locker. He's always like, what's in your locker, North Korea? Yo, come on, open up, show me. North Korea's always like, Remy or on, America! But they just keep trading blows with each other, like, hey, North Korea, what's it like sucking your supreme leader's 2-inch Asian dick every night? Hey, America, why don't you ask your mother? Oh, that's it, you're fucking dead, bro. And America pulls out a gun, obviously. But, luckily, Canada's there, and he's like, no, America, let's talk about her feelings. What's your problem, Canada? No, I think you're the one with the problem, America. China's starting to beat you in exams in sport, and you can't handle the fact you're no longer as dominant. What? What are you talking about? I'm still dominant. Hey, you know what I'm gonna do? I'm gonna go steal Jordan's lunch money, and Australia's gonna come with me. Won't you, Australia? Oh, fuck yeah, let's go, mate. Whoa. Oh, are you drunk, Australia? Oh my God, England, Australia's drunk again. Oh, for goodness sake, I cannot believe he's still part of the bloody Commonwealth. Why can't you be more like New Zealand? Yeah, suck on that. I love American TV. The thing I love most about American TV are these really overly patriotic documentary shows they have. You know these ones that are like, America's largest skyscrapers, or America's worst plane accidents. Like, I'm pretty sure the strategy is just to have America's, then an adjective, then something else, and it's a hit show, okay? And you always have to watch it because the voiceover is so compelling. You know, it's always like, Jonathan walks to school when suddenly an SUV swerves violently, leaving Jonathan fighting for his life. But the culprit was not the 40-year-old driver of the SUV, no. The real culprit was one of America's worst potholes. Coming up after America's worst potholes, America's most violent pigeon massacres. I was also in India recently, and I hate these people that come back from India and feel the need to tell you about the cultural experience they had. You know, these people, they're like, oh my God, I just went to India. It was such a cultural experience. You know, like, I really felt like I found myself, you know. I finally found my soul, which is amazing because I'm in like the 10th year of my arts degree. I went to India and I went to this city called Goa, which is meant to be the party capital of India. So I decided to go on a party cruise. And it was way over capacity, first of all. And I got to the top of the ship, the party deck, and the MC, it was so cheesy. Like, the MC, he was like, okay, yeah, here in Goa, we are not like the other cities. Yeah, we are a party city. Yeah, we like to dance party. So tonight, I want to see you all up here having a party. And then, like, 200 men and no women at all just got up and did the cheesiest dance moves you've ever seen. Okay, they're up there like, yeah, this is a total party, right? I wanna... or the chain has officially come off this one, Vijay. You know, that was my cultural experience. I know a girl that went to India, sat under a palm tree, a little boy climbed into the palm tree and just took a shit on her. Like a proper Indian curry shit as well, like... like, was that her cultural experience, you know? And look, I'm not trying to deny there's an amazing spiritual underbelly to a lot of these third world nations, but I just don't get this mentality that's like, oh, I took a selfie with a little boy from the slums, that makes me a better person, okay? Like, no, okay, you come home and you go straight back to doing Jaeger bombs and sending nude Snapchats, okay? Just because you go to a temple and pray to some god that means nothing to you does not change the fact you're still a self-entitled Westerner. Like, you'd still write an angry blog if they killed your favourite Game of Thrones character, all right? Look, I think for every tourist that experiences a genuine spiritual journey, there has to be at least 100 in board shorts and bikinis, getting blind drunk, stealing a rickshaw, crashing it into a religious temple, throwing up on the monument, and the locals are looking at this going, can you believe this is actually good for our economy? Like, cultural experience, that to me is such a patronizing first world term. You'd never hear the reverse. You'd never hear an African guy coming back from America being like, oh my God, it was such a cultural experience. You know, I really felt like I found myself. You know, I got drunk. I went to the strip club. I went to McDonald's. I even got to go to a onesie party. I love European cinema. I particularly love Italian films. I think Italian films are very romantic. I was watching this Italian film the other day, and it was this this love triangle coming to a climax, and one of the girls was like, oh, Santino, my heart, it still yearns for you, but I feel like I should have let you free, like a flower in the wind. And then the other girl was like, no, Santino, it is I who loves you more. Make love to my body right now. And then all three of them just broke into passionate lovemaking. And that was a children's film, so... I think Western culture just cannot compete with that European sense of romance. And this is even reflected in our monuments. Like, even here in Queensland, we've got the Q1 Tower. And everyone always brags about that being the biggest in the Southern Hemisphere. Like, oh, yeah, the Q1, right? Biggest in the Southern Hemisphere. Yeah, size is all that matters and she's the fucking biggest, yeah. And in the UK, they have Big Ben, which is the biggest clock in the world. They're like, yeah, mate, us Big Ben, mate. Biggest clock in the world, mate. You got a big clock, us all that matters. And you compare this with the Italians, who have the Leaning Tower of Pisa, which I feel like was built upon romantic ideals. You know, the girl saw it for the first time, was like, oh, Santino, you idiot. The tower, she leans to the side. Yes, Maria, I could have built the most perfect tower, but sometimes, it is our flaws that make us beautiful.
For it is not about the size of your tower, but what you do with it that counts. And each year she shall fall closer and closer to the ground, but I too shall fall deeper and deeper in love with her. That joke was for you, Hannah.
Oh, yeah.
Now, I'm 20 years old now, and I feel like for everyone in their teens or their 20s, they're doing either one of two things. They're either getting drunk or they're recounting their previous drunken incidents, all right? And the way they recount these drunken incidents is hilarious because it is the greatest thing that has ever happened to them. I'll be with my friends at pre-drinks. Someone brings out a particular drink like Jim Beam. Someone else is like, oh, Brendan, it's time for you to get reacquainted with your favourite mistress. And Brendan's like, oh, yes, I will admit, Jim Beam and I have had a tumultuous on and off again relationship, but look, I just love having him inside me, mate. This is how it is, okay? And like someone else, you know, will then top that. They'll be like, guys, no one can deny Brendan's homoerotic affiliation with Jim Beam, but it is nothing compared to Stephen's night of debauchery with his good friend Bailey's. And I'm always the one that's like, when the fuck did this happen? And they're like, oh, Neil, it was so fucked, right? It was Sarah Jones's 21st birthday. And Stephen over here, after drinking an entire bottle of Bailey's, stumbles over to Sarah's mum, who is giving a speech in front of the entire family, slaps her on the ass, and says, Mrs. Sarah, it is my ultimate fantasy to fuck you and your daughter at the same time. But every friend group has that one drunken story that is just the holy grail to them. Like, you know it's going to be a big night when somebody, like, gets up and he's like, guys, they were both quality instances, but it is nothing compared to the legend we know as Pancake Dick. And I'm always like, what the fuck is Pancake Dick? And then they react like I've just said, what the fuck is bread? They're like, oh my God, Neil, you don't know Pancake Dick? Oh, do you even human, man? And then they'll tell me the story as though it's some sort of drunken Shakespearean monologue. They'll be like, oh, the legend of Pancake Dick takes place in a time when our bottles were dry and our fingers were wet. A time we knew as grade 11. Now, it was Claire McKenzie's 16th, and James over here, he was trying pills for the first time. And Neil, at 8 o'clock at night, we dead set caught him humping the dishwasher. And we're like, what the fuck are you doing, man? And he's like, oh, I love her. Anyway, he eventually passed out from this in Claire's brother's room. So we left him, the rest of us boys, we went out, had a couple more drinks, and when we came back, James was gone, okay? And I don't mean gone as in, oh, he was so gone. I mean, like, where the fuck is James? Where the fuck is he? And the next thing we see is the light come on in the neighbor's kitchen window, and we see a shirtless James poke his head out of the window, yelling out, guys, I found the goddess of life. I must please her. And we're like, oh, fuck, James is about to commit rape. Okay. We bolted over to the neighbour's house, smashed in the door, ran into the kitchen, and Neil, what we saw was worse than rape, man. What we saw was a naked James, his dick inside of the neighbour's pancake machine. He was fucking the neighbour's pancake machine! I know. And by default, I have to be like, bullshit, that could not have happened. And they're like, Neil, you can't make this shit up, okay? He was there, somehow fully erect, pancake residue all over his groin, just going at it with the machine. And then I have to be like, oh, what happened next? And they're like, oh, it took like three of us to restrain him. The old lady that lived there called the police, and now James has a criminal record. And James is like, but it was worth it because it was such a sick night. the whole group just starts chanting, pancake dick, pancake dick, pancake dick. And to me, that is the perfect symbol of capitalism. Like African kids working 12 hours a day so James can stick his dick into the pancake machine. And if you told the African kids that story, they'd be like, well, if I had a machine that made food for me whenever I wanted, I would have sex with it too. All right, well, what I was watching quite recently was one of these, like, National Geographic or Discovery Channel documentaries about this African tribe. You know these ones where they try to find the most primitive tribe on the planet? And there's, like, some really big African guy and he's got tattoos everywhere and he's like,
for the boy to become a man, when he feels the heat of his 13th summer, he must whip himself till he bleeds the blood of manhood and offer it to the woman in a carcass of a meerkat.
And everyone who watches it is like, oh my God, it's so primitive, it's so tribal. Ah! And like, I agreed with that general sentiment. I thought Western society has obviously come a long way from our tribal days. We've evolved, we've moved forward. Till I went clubbing for the first time. And no, we haven't evolved one fucking bit, okay? You ever want to go on safari? Don't bother buying a plane ticket to Africa. Just go out on a Saturday night because it is a bunch of drunk and horny monkeys jumping up and down for 4 hours in a sweaty breeding frenzy, okay? And all my friends say the same thing about clubbing. They're like, oh, bro, you just gotta be drunk to enjoy clubbing, man. You just gotta be drunk, bro. Take, like, pills, coke, ice, heroin, weed. That's how you fucking enjoy clubbing, bro. And that's saying something, isn't it? If I have to be intoxicated to enjoy something, it's not an enjoyable thing. You know, the only time I ever enjoyed watching Twilight, I was drunk. It's still fucking shit. And, and, you know, picking up at clubs, no one's looking for a sense of humour. No one's looking for a personality or intelligence. Everyone's looking for the most genetically superior specimen they can get with. And my friends say the same thing about picking up. They're like, oh, bro, it's all about the confidence, bro. And it's all about the confidence. You might see a girl on the other side of the dance floor. She looks pretty hot. You know, give her a kiss. Give her, wow, this one, bro. Just stick your chest out because you just did chest day, bro. Just like that. You know, just like walk right up to her, bro. Walk right up to her, look her dead in the eyes, put your arm around her waist, bring her towards you, start dancing, start grinding, and then blah, 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 blah. Oh, sneaky fingers, bro. Sneaky fingers, bro. And I was like, yeah, okay, I'd rather not be the basis of an episode of Law & Order SVU. Thank you very much. And the way girls dance at clubs is so good. You all look really nice dancing at clubs. You got these tight party dresses. You got the arms. You got, oh fuck it, I'll just commit to this. You got the arms. You got the hips going. It's fucking like. It looks really good. Whereas guys, we all look like idiots dancing at clubs. I don't know how anyone can be attracted to a man at a nightclub, okay? What the fuck is this shit? Man, some of these people are going to have kids. How are they supposed to respond to the inevitable question? Oh, mommy, how did you meet daddy? Oh, baby, as soon as I felt his dick rub against me, I knew he was the one. It's a primal breeding frenzy, honestly. All it's missing is David Attenborough at the end, just to be like, and those males who are unsuccessful drown their sorrows with the consumption of a kebab. Yeah. Yeah. Why is it always the worst fried foods at the end of a drunken night out? Like, haven't you put your body through enough hell? Shouldn't you be stumbling home at 2 a.m. in the morning being like, oh my God, I would kill for a garden salad right now? I'm pretty sure if Charles Darwin was ever exposed to clubbing, he'd be like, whoa, there goes my theory. Or what about a man from Shakespearean times? You know, they used to court women with songs and poetry. Imagine bringing one of them back and putting them in a nightclub. They'd stand no chance. Oh, fair maiden, your hair, it flows like the grandest of rivers. What the fuck, bitch? Do you even lift? Shakespearean times, just think about that. William Shakespeare was so influential an artist, an entire period of history was named after him. What are they going to call our time period in the future? Huh? Oh, back then in the Bieber Minaj Kardashian era. Or as it is more commonly referred to, the hashtag YOLO swag dark ages. Brisbane, you guys have been fucking amazing. Ah, thank you so much. Yes. Thank you. Your fucking money, cunt! Yeah. All right, what other quotes do you want me to do? Yell some shit out. Yeah, I'm gonna finger some bitches tonight, yeah! How old are you, by the way, Hannah? Are you single? Yeah, see, that shit was all filmed, so I couldn't talk to you, but now I'm gonna fucking... is this your mother? Oh, I'm joking. Oh, I was kidding. Your younger sister, oh, is it? No, but seriously, how old are you? 21. That's too old. I'm kidding. Are you single? No. Where's your boyfriend? Canberra. Well, that's fucking good enough. That's... Oh. Yeah, look, I just want to say you guys have been fucking an amazing fucking crowd. This is the first time I've been to Brisbane. It definitely won't be the last. If you guys want a photo or anything like that, I'll be out. Just give me a few minutes. I'll be out there. You can get a photo with me. I told you, you're fighting racism if you fuck me. Oh, you know what? Just come into the dressing room, whatever. Are you going out tonight? Oh. Who's going out tonight? Yeah? Is that it? Fuck off. It's a Saturday night. What's your name? Are you going out tonight? Yeah. All right, you then. Fucking, okay. No one's going out tonight. Well, whoever's going, if... You are going out tonight, and I'm coming, and you'll be coming too. All right, I'll leave you. I'll finally leave you on this one. I mentioned my dad in the first half. I mentioned my parents. I actually had to tell my grandparents the other day that I wanted to pursue comedy, and it's a bit weird for them. Because to them, there's only really two options. It's just like, is he doing medicine or engineering? What are you doing? Medicine or engineering? What is it? Tell me. Comedy. What is this comedy you talk about? Huh? What is this? Huh? So I showed my granddad a video of my comedy, and he's like, oh my God, you are just talking. What, you are just going to talk for the rest of your life, huh? You're just talking, huh? And I said, no, Granddad, they're jokes. They're jokes, Granddad. And he's like, jokes, jokes, jokes. I did not get any. And then my grandmother says, kind of like you at school, is Neil.
Ladies and gentlemen, you've been amazing. Thank you so much. Thank you, Brisbane. Thank you.